You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Welcome, everybody. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Hope your Thursday afternoon is going fine. Thank you for joining us all. We've got a fine guest for the next half hour. His name is William Park Sutherland. He is the Government Affairs Director for Kids Forward. Welcome to The Maggie Dawn Show, William. It's a real pleasure to have you.
Hi. Thanks so much for having me.
In preparing for this, you shared a little bit of your background, and so we're going to spend the bulk of our time today talking about the real existential, life-threatening cuts that Republicans have put forward in the big, brutal bill. But before we get there, I was reading other news this morning, and apparently Democrats have spent, I don't know, like $30 million on an assessment of how to reach young men. One of the things that that came out of that, at least some of the initial reporting that I'm seeing, is talking about the lightning rod that so-called cultural issues have been for the Democratic Party, and that depending on which politico you're talking to, the assessment of that analysis was, well, we need to stop talking about things like DEI. And I heard Basil Smichel address this a bit this morning, and I wanted to talk with you a little bit about it just because we have some shared background in this area. And one of the things that I have said for a long time on this program is that one of the falsehoods, one of the big lies, if you will, that has come from Republicans for decades, now from the MAGA regime, and it has simply become one of the baseline operating presumptions of almost all policy discussions, and it is a lie. And that is this idea of false scarcity, and that the world is zero sum, and that if we craft policies with intentionality and deliberateness, so that we are actually trying to foster better competition, people from more diverse backgrounds actually being able to access opportunities on a more equitable basis, that if we do those things, whether it's black and brown folks, women folks, the LGBTQIA plus community, that by definition, that means men or white men in particular will do worse. This, to me, is one of the greatest political lies of modern American political history. And I wanted to just, going through some of what we shared getting ready for this, I wanted to give you an opportunity to address that because it is pernicious and it is sticky.
Yeah, so, I haven't seen the report you're talking about, and I haven't heard Basil's comments. But, you know, what I can say is that, you know, before I worked at Kids Forward, I was a part of the disability advocacy community, and we talk about curb cuts, and there's this thing called the curb cut effect, which is that when you address the barriers for the people who need it the most, you actually make things easier for everybody else. And so the curb cut is a perfect example, right? This is so that wheelchair users can navigate streets and sidewalks more safely, but this makes it easier for people who are carrying their groceries. It makes it easier for folks who have their luggage. It makes it easier for parents who are pushing a stroller. It makes it easier for everyone. And the same thing is true of public policy, that when we make something accessible for people who experience the most administrative barriers, we make it better for everyone else. And zero sum is just really, not true. And it's a lie. And I think it's a fallacy that has really hurt us in general. And specifically, you know, I'd pull you to Heather McGee's research in The Sum of Us, and really talking about the way that racism affects every single person in this country, including white people,
yes,
including myself. And so, you know, rather than share our public investments, our public goods, we defunded them. And we drain the pool. We drain the pool for health insurance. We drained the pool for student debt. We drained the pool for mortgage, you know, and I know little about these things, but it's a very, I think it's a, an example
policy,
of how this
right?
works, right?
Yeah.
And the same is true on the other side, right? So this bill that the Republicans have kind of rushed through without reading, I mean, and it's very clear that this is reckless because now some of them are saying, I didn't know this thing was in it, is that these kinds of cuts, this kind of death by red tape, is going to affect everyone. This yeah. isn't going to be, you know, only the people who sort of don't deserve to have Medicaid, whoever those people are. Right. But what's very clear and what this Congressional Budget Office shows us is that, you know, this is going to affect everyone. This is going to affect white people. This is going to affect rural folks. This is going to hurt rural hospitals. And so, this is the flip side, right, of this idea that, you know, the zero sum kind of works both ways. And so we're in a situation where these barriers and this red tape is going to affect everyone, even if it was designed maybe to affect a smaller population.
Well, I think you've put your finger on what is the con. And that to me is invented, made up boogeyman. And I talk about this all the time as an economist. It is usually the case. It has been political gospel for people to use case examples. Oh, well, here's James whatever, and here's his story. And this story is either good or bad. And based on this one story, we're going to do this set of policies. The problem with that is that it's not actually system-wide analysis, it's just a one-off. And so even in the case where Republicans and now the MAGA regime have pointed to what I am going to call one-off errors of system where people have abused a system, they have used that to construct a false boogeyman, usually exploiting all sorts of stereotypes baked into our collective consciousness here as Americans to effectively convince white people to support candidates that will do things like gut Medicaid to the tune of $700-800 billion, causing 10 million plus people to lose their health care, to cause rural hospitals to close so that when you or your mom or dad or grandparents have a heart attack and they need to get to a hospital to save their lives and minutes matter, that hospital won't be there anymore. To create the false boogeyman, a false narrative, to convince people to legitimately vote against their interests, and for what public policy aim? Tax cuts for billionaires. This is the playbook of so many years. When we look to Wisconsin, I think sometimes the terminology matters, and people don't actually understand that when we say Medicaid, we're talking about them. Tell us a little bit more, William.
Yeah. So, I mean, and I think this is one of the things that if more people understood that when we're talking about cuts to Medicaid, we're talking about them, I think we'd be in a different situation. But in, you know, in Wisconsin, you know, there are more than 20 programs that are funded by Medicaid. So I just heard a story about a person who was talking to their managed care company and said, their managed care provider, their Medicaid provider, and, you know, said, oh, I'm not worried about this because I have Forward Health. I don't have Medicaid. Your Forward Health card is Medicaid.
Yes.
If Badger Care Plus is Medicaid, Family Care is Medicaid, Comprehensive Community Services, which is a broad-based mental health program for kids and adults, is Medicaid. The Medical Assistance Purchase Plan, which helps people with disabilities work and get access to their long-term care, it's Medicaid. Medicaid covers, you know, more than 50% of nursing home stays. And I think that's something people really don't think about at all, because they sort of think about Medicare as being the program for older adults. And so they think, well, nursing homes are generally for older adults, so that must be paid for by Medicare. That's paid for by Medicaid. I think the kind of secret sauce is that people when they say something like, we're only going to take this away for the people who don't deserve it, I think lots of people think they deserve it. And they're right. They do deserve it. But they kind of lose who's in mind. Yes. Because, like, no, you are the person who doesn't deserve it in this model, right? We are trying to...
You are the people that they're saying don't deserve it.
Affordable Care Act without saying that.
Sorry to interrupt. And I think that being clear about the terminology, it's Forward Health, it's Family Care, it's Badger Care, it's Badger Care Plus, that's what they're talking about cutting. This concept, and it is the corollary to the zero sum, right, and the false scarcity, this concept of deserve, it is part and parcel with these falsehoods that there, again, the boogeyman is all of these people who don't, quote, deserve this benefit are getting it, when in reality, that is simply a lie. We know that when we look at folks that aren't otherwise disabled or elderly or children that are on Medicaid, it's upwards of 75% of those people are working full-time already. What we are creating is administrative barriers, literal death by a thousand paper cuts. I was working on Capitol Hill when Newt Gingrich authored and ushered through quote unquote welfare reform, which had this exact same framework. And what we know from that is that more families went hungry, more children went hungry, dropout rates went up, people were sicker. That is what the result was. Those people and their needs didn't disappear. We just wrote them out of the programs.
Absolutely. And, you know, one of the things that we say in the Wisconsin Medicaid Coalition, which is a group of more than 300 people and 150 organizations across the state that are concerned about the impact of Medicaid cuts, is prove your working requirements. Because the issue is not going to be whether you're working. The issue is going to be, can you prove it? Can you jump through the bureaucratic hoops? And the people who can't are not necessarily going to be the people who don't have a job. It's also a job loss penalty, because if you lose your job, then you risk also losing your health insurance.
Yeah, the double whammy. This country's had a flawed model of health insurance for so long. Employer-based health insurance doesn't work well for employees. It doesn't work well for employers. And it certainly doesn't work well for all of us that contribute in tax dollars or through deductibles and other ways. We end up paying for health care one way or another. We're going to continue this important discussion with William Park Sutherland, the Government Affairs Director for Kids Forward on the other side. Don't go anywhere. My name's Maggie Dawn, and you're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Welcome back, everybody. Hope you're having a fine Thursday afternoon. I know I am, because I'm getting smarter. We've got a great guest helping me understand what is going on, and hope helping you understand more of what's going on and the real costs of the big, brutal bill. His name is William Park Sutherland. He's the Government Affairs Director for Kids Forward. Thanks again for sticking around. William, right before the break, we were getting to what I think is one of the key pieces that gets missed. This is not cost savings. This is not going to cost taxpayers less. While they're trying to, the MAGA regime is trying to argue that, look, we're going to save $800 billion, nearly $1 trillion by all of these draconian cuts to Medicaid, it's actually going to end up costing us all more, but people will be sicker and they will die more. Connect the dots for us, William, if you would.
Yeah, so... You know, first, I think the important thing is any of the savings, any of the Medicaid savings, is from people who right now are eligible for health insurance and enrolled, who will not get it, who will lose their health insurance coverage and their access to care. But they won't lose their care needs. People still need healthcare. And so what that's going to do is it's going to mean we're going to have somewhere in the neighborhood of 82,000 people, more people who are uninsured in Wisconsin. And, you know, according to an analysis from the Center for American Progress, somewhere in the neighborhood of $285 million in uncompensated care costs. And so we will pay for that with those of us who are on private health insurance. We will pay for that with increased premiums. And so not only will hospitals be losing money because they won't be able to get reimbursed by Medicaid for those services, but they're going to have to pay for them and probably not receive any compensation for them, because we're talking about, you know, struggling families that are, you know, just trying to make ends meet. And we're going to pay for that twice.
Yes.
Right? And if we want to, plug those holes, you know, in the Wisconsin budget, we only have four bad choices. We can raise taxes to pay for the same services we already offer right now, although we get penalized, I think, if we did that.
Yes.
We could cut provider rates, which we know are already too low in most cases.
Yes.
We could change
and will lead to less providers, because many won't be able to survive. I'm sorry to interrupt.
No, absolutely important.
The third of the four bad choices.
Right. We could change what we cover. So we could cover fewer services. Wisconsin is one of the few states that covers all optional services in the Medicaid program. And that sounds like, oh, that means we're covering like acupuncture and Reiki. That's prescription drug services. That's dental services for kids. That is home and community-based services, so that people can, people with disabilities and long-term care needs can stay in their home or in a community-based setting instead of a nursing home. Those are the kinds of things. Those are optional services. And the last thing that we can do is we can make broad groups of people ineligible, right? Those are the ways that we can save money. And all of those things have knock-on effects as well. And so Wisconsin lawmakers, if this bill goes into effect, are going to be left holding the bag and figuring out what to do. And they're going to have a big bag of bad decisions to make after, you know, if this bill, as it's currently envisioned, becomes law.
Folks, that's William Park Sutherland of Kids Forward putting all of the crumbs together for us. To briefly summarize, people that are currently eligible and enrolled in Medicaid, if the big brutal bill becomes law, will be kicked off. But their needs don't go away, which means we will end up incurring collectively as Wisconsinites somewhere in the ballpark of $285 to $300 million more in uncovered medical care costs. That has to come out of somewhere. We pay more in premiums and deductibles. And if those burdens are being shifted to the state, boy, we don't have a good set of options. And by the way, all of this is entirely unnecessary if we simply said as a group, we are unwilling to take away life-saving medical care from those who need it to give tax cuts to the 0.1 and 1 percenters that don't need a penny more in tax cuts. I was particularly moved. There was a colloquy with the secretary for the Department of Education about what she was going to do with her extra $4 million that she got from the Trump tax cuts, because she's a billionaire. And she, I don't know. That means you don't need it at base. Very briefly, we've got about just a little bit over a minute left. What's going to happen in Wisconsin as a result of the emergency food aid cuts, William?
Yeah, I mean, so there's so many bad parts of this bill. So in Wisconsin, cutting the SNAP program, which is called Food Share in Wisconsin, you know, that would result in about 100,000 people losing access to food services and result in Wisconsin losing about $314 million per year.
And again, their need to eat doesn't won't go away. Anywhere.
Right.
Mr. William Park Sutherland, I would love to have you back to continue to dig into these issues and how systems actually operate. I really appreciate your time, sir. The Government Affairs Director for Kids Forward. Thank you, William Park Sutherland. We're going to change the tone, talk a little bit about Aaron Rodgers. He's got a new team. When we come back with sports reporter Mike Clemens right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Welcome back, everybody. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Big, big thanks to my last guest, William Park Sutherland of Kids Forward. He is their government affairs director, as well as all of our fine guests today, including Congressional Representative Mark Pocan and Tom Javits, the senior fellow on immigration policy for the Center for American Progress Action Fund. And after all of that hard work this afternoon, getting smarter together like we do every day here, how about we talk a little sports? Y'all know I love some sports, love the Brewer Crew, love the Pack, big Badgers fan. And there is a little bit of news concerning probably one of my least favorite professional athletes. And here to tell us all about it is sportscaster extraordinaire and sports journalist Mike Clemens. Welcome to the Maggie Dawn Show, Mike. Tell us what's going on with A-Raj.
Yeah, well, you know, the networks are breaking that Aaron Rodgers has now agreed to come in and sign. He's going to sign tomorrow with the Pittsburgh Steelers, and that they've got their mandatory mini camp next week, so it's assumed that he'll be reporting for that. And
let me just ask you that much. Aaron Rodgers has never really abided by the mandatory, I'm air quoting here for all of you not watching on YouTube, mandatory mini camps. He's sort of, different rules for Aaron. You think he'll actually show?
I do, because it was a year ago at this time where Robert Saleh, the head coach of the Jets, best friend of Matt LaFleur, announced when they went to their Jets mandatory mini camp and Aaron was coming back from the torn Achilles, where's your quarterback? And he said, well, he's not here. Okay, well, then that means, you know, according to the rules, you got to fine him. Yeah, he'll be fined. And then it was a big secret, like everything seems to be with Aaron these days, that he was in Egypt, probably shooting scenes that ended up in his three-part documentary on Netflix called Enigma, you know, about his life and lifestyles and whatnot. And people at the time then a year ago were saying, relax, Clemens, it's just mandatory minicamp. I said, oh, really? Okay, let's see how this plays out. Well, let's see. Nathaniel Hackett, offensive coordinator, gets relieved of his duties.
Yes.
Robert Saleh gets fired in season. The
yes.
general manager of the team gets fired.
Gone.
The interim coaches, they clean house, and the new regime comes in from the Jets and tells Aaron in January, you know what? We're done. You're out the door. See ya. Even though they're taking a huge salary cap hit, and, you know, he wore out his welcome in just 2 years.
Aaron Rodgers, the Donald Trump of football? I mean, it seems like there's some sort of like weird loyalty pledge. He's had this sort of knock-on impacts in other clubs that he belongs to. What do you think his reception is going to be in Pittsburgh, Mike?
Oh, I think they're welcome to it because you know what? Mike Tomlin, who's been there as long... Mike got hired, I believe, about a week after Mike McCarthy was hired by the Packers.
Yes.
And just by like a few months ended up being... the current, you know, youngest NFL head coach, you know, in the league at that time, back in 06. But the Steelers have still been looking for a real starting quarterback since Ben Roethlisberger retired a couple of years ago, and they hung on to him, Big Ben, a little too long. So, it's you know, they just had Russell Wilson and Justin Fields in their camp last year and started between those two. Justin's now with the Jets. And just in talking about – well, as I was watching Malik Willis – I was watching Packers practice the other day, and there's Jordan Love moving the team down the field. He threw one ball, it might have been 60 yards in the air, and hit Jaden Reed. Then he hits Romeo Doubs for a two-pointer back in the corner of the end zone, and everybody's celebrating. You know, Love looks really sharp. Then Malik Willis, the guy who won a couple of games for them last year when Jordan Love had the knee injury, he's moving the ball quite nice, making these mid-range passes about 25, 30 yards. And I turned to one of the Packers people, I said, Okay, who do the Steelers have on their depth chart right now at quarterback? Because Malik Willis is better than anybody's in Pittsburgh. You know, meaning like this Mason Rudolph or, you know, the rookie Will Howard out of Ohio State that they took like in the sixth round. And this was the whole plan, obviously. They've been waiting. So we now know a little more that the fact is that Aaron Rodgers has we knew, you know, here in Green Bay that he's always admired Mike Tomlin as a head coach and how he runs his operation. And LaFleur even referenced that a couple weeks ago in an interview. But, you know, Aaron tried to say on the McAfee show, look, you know, I've got a new person in my life. I've got some folks that are battling cancer in my life right now. I want to answer to family first. Okay, fine. But the fact of the matter is he did this in Green Bay in his last season. I mean, 1 year, remember he held out on Brian Gutekunst all year and pointed toward him coming out of the COVID thing? And then his very last season, they drafted, you know, a bunch of these rookie, very talented receivers. We're like 2 weeks into training camp, and Rodgers is like, hey, these guys got to, you know, they got to catch up. We got a game coming up in 2 weeks to start the season, and we got to be on the same page. And I said, Aaron, we know, you know, when Brett used to come in here, it would take him 2.5 weeks or so to get going. And he smiled like, you know, it took Brett a while to get in shape to get it going. I said, you come in here day one, you're ready to go. And he smiled again because that's a fact too. I said, but don't you think that these rookies that you're complaining about right now might be a little bit further if you'd been here for just a couple of those OTAs or minicamp practices?
Well, that's,
and some
I
of
mean,
the other,
yeah,
some
like,
of the other
at,
media
at,
guys looked at me like, you know, you just slit your throat, dude. This guy's going to drop you like a hot potato. And,
well,
but I've been with him. I've been with him the whole time. He says that's when he came up with this BS answer where he said, listen, what those guys, those young guys are learning in the OTAs and the mini camps in the spring, that's the 100 level classes. When I get here and what we do on
the
field,
the 300.
That's exactly what he said. That's what, and it's like, well, and guess what? He ended up having a losing season and he's with the Jets and that's the rest. And he got his coach fired.
Got a whole, again, is Aaron Rodgers the Donald Trump of football? Like, if you're around him long enough, you'll lose your bar license, you'll get fired and disgraced. Mike, let me ask you this. In my opinion, when I look at Aaron Rodgers' career, he's going to be haunted by the fact that he only got one ring. The only coach that I think was really able to sort of harness the power of Aaron Rodgers and have a productive relationship was Mike McCarthy. What are the odds that Mike Tomlin is that guy in what might be, likely, probably is Aaron Rodgers' last season? Or has Aaron Rodgers' ego got so far out of hand that those kinds of tensions are always going to be there?
Yeah, I don't know so much about it's Aaron's ego. It's just he makes everything so darn complicated.
Hard,
you know, like in his last couple of seasons in Green Bay, for example, we talked about he's got as many as 30 hand signals. And there was a play where he even brought in a veteran receiver for him, Sammy Watkins, who missed one of those hand signals at the goal line. And he ran the route of the play that was called in the huddle.
In the huddle.
And Rodgers ran the one of the hand sign he called the line because Sammy didn't look up, you know, and crick his neck up, you know, and see over the line that he's waving some hand signal, and the ball ended up flying, you know, empty into the corner, and they, you know, lost the game to the Lions, like 15-9. I mean, that's the problem, is the guy starts making it so complicated. Now, you know, he's already done workouts with DK Metcalf, the big wide receiver that they brought in from the Seattle Seahawks in a trade. He's been in contact with the Steelers to the point where it's not only Mike Tomlin, the offensive coordinator's Arthur Smith. That's a guy who Matt LaFleur worked with the Titans, so the language should be similar. And then there's a Tom Arth, who actually had worked in the Packers quarterback room back in 06 and 07 when McCarthy was the coach. So there's some familiarity with the current quarterback coach with the Steelers, too. It's just that, you know, can Aaron just get back to maybe running the play that the offensive coordinator calls and that the rest of the team is on the play was on the same page, as opposed to making it so complicated.
Yeah, isn't it? Maybe we're actually saying the same thing, and I'm just being a little cheeky about it. When I say his ego is out of control, it requires a massive, in my opinion, out-of-control ego to overcomplicate the hell out of it, come out of huddles and say, I know better, I'm going to throw a hand, right? Like, there's an element of I know better in almost everything Aaron Rodgers does. And that's, you know, in a locker room, in a huddle, that plus does he actually accept accountability when things don't go right? Because I don't care if you're in a boardroom or a locker room, the guy or gal I want to follow is typically a highly accountable person that will actually try to check their ego and will want to know, hey, what do the other experts have to say here? I mean, ultimately, you get on a field, clock's running, he's got to make the calls. But isn't the overcomplicatedness a bit of an expression of ego at base, Mike?
I went to Chico for 3 or 4 days and talked to his high school coach, his junior mm-hmm. college coach at Butte. It's been this way all along, Maggie. I mean, you know, he had
so
three friends.
He's always been an egomaniac, is what you're talking about.
No, he's the kid that sat in the front row and, you know, shot the hand up to answer all the questions. And he's always been the kid who kind of stood there in the locker room or at the, you know, the school dance and sort of surveyed the room first before he made his moves. I will tell you this, though. I sat down with Marquez Valdez-Scantling, former Packers receiver, at the mm-hmm. Super Bowl. And I said, what do you think about, you know, your former quarterback in a darkness, you know, retreat for 3 or 4 days? And he goes, listen, he says, I got cut in football as a freshman in high school. I managed to get into college. I managed to get picked later by the Packers. That guy made my career. And I'll do whatever he tells me. Aaron Rodgers, guess what? He makes money for the players around him and for the coaches around him because he's so damn talented. And that's why he's got a lot of friends in the league. It's just you got to understand that Aaron, though, if you get him off to the side at a barbecue, he's going to start telling you how the pyramids were probably built by aliens who are still among us and now living in the ocean. And you just nod and play along.
I love it. One of my colleagues here at Civic Media, Micah Clemens, you can find his fine work across our network, popping into shows, writing articles, setting me straight about Aaron Rodgers. Listen, as a fellow Smarty Pants kid, I will say this, like, I can respect that about Mr. Rodgers, certainly. And I certainly always like to see a guy that is raising other people up. Especially in the league. And that definitely, you put money in people's pocket, it'll breed some loyalty. That's for damn sure. Mike, who are you liking in this next season? I know it's super early. We're not even in mini camps, but you know this stuff like the back of your hand. Which teams you think are going to be looking real strong right out of the gate?
You often look for like the Cinderella team, like a team like the Commanders, and see if they can go to the next
season.
Level.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and because it's very hard to repeat. Very hard to repeat. Eagles are still a very tough team. I don't know. It's going to be really interesting just in the division because, you know, you had the Lions and the Vikings with the multiple wins and the Packers right behind them. The Packers, even though they got 11 wins and into the playoffs, they were 1-5 in the NFC North, you know, and they won that one game against the Bears by a fingertip and blocking a kick. So right now the Packers, rightfully so, are saying, we got to figure out how to beat those teams in our division first. So that's the challenge facing Green Bay right now.
Yeah, we've had a very competitive division. It's been fun to watch the games. I would prefer a few less winning by the blocked field goal. I like a little cushion when we're heading into the two-minute drill in the fourth quarter. Listen, Mike, thank you so much. I can't wait to talk more sports with you as the summer goes on. You're always welcome on this fine program. Folks, I've got my final thoughts coming up next right here on the Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. Keep it locked.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome back, everybody. Are you all making your popcorn? I know I am. Because the Trump-Elon feud is eating up. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Big thanks to Mike Clemens talking a little Aaron Rodgers and the Pittsburgh Steelers and what we can expect in this coming season. Again, big thanks to Mike and all of you for staying tuned in. Apparently, some breaking news here. Stephen Miller has abruptly canceled his scheduled Fox News appearance to spew more racist garbage due to a quote, emergency meeting in the Oval Office. I wonder Wonder what that might be about. Apparently, Elon Musk is now in a tweet, a zeet storm. Is that what we call him now? Posting all kinds of pictures of Trump and Jeffrey Epstein. Claimed earlier in the day that Donald Trump is in the Epstein files on Twitter, which then caused Representative Eric Swalwell of California to retweet that, calling for release the Epstein files, which I've always thought, like, yeah, release the Epstein files. Not some weird Pam Bondi edited version, you know, like all of them. Let's find out what actually happened. Steve Bannon calling on Trump to deport Elon Musk. Elon Musk retorting on X, asking for Donald Trump to potentially be impeached. My good Lord. Here is Caroline Leavitt actually now having to address the claim that Donald Trump is in the Epstein files from the White House briefing room, saying, quote, "This is an unfortunate episode from Elon, who is unhappy with the one big, beautiful bill because it does not include the policies he wanted. The president is focused on passing this historic piece of legislation and making our country great again. For billionaires." That's what we should, every time they say make our country great again, we should all say for billionaires. Just shout it at the TVs every time. This is pretty nuts. What do I think is actually happening here? Whether or not this is genuine or not, what is this? It's a distraction from the hurt and the harm that's going to be caused to people that we know, people in your family, folks that you work with right here in Wisconsin, from this big, brutal bill, and frankly, the dysfunction of the MAGA regime here in our own state government, who want to cut child care counts to the tune of $500 million, who want to underfund public education, making you pay more in property taxes, failing to expand Medicaid to cover more Wisconsinites at a cheaper cost to Wisconsin taxpayers. Brutal stuff. Again, happening in D.C. by the MAGA regime there, happening right here at home by the MAGA regime in Madison. It is shameful. Let's not be distracted by this entertaining, yes, but also very sad feud that is just two big billionaire babies slinging guano at one another, for lack of a better term. Ollie from the Northwoods, what do you got this afternoon?
Hi, I'm just quick. I was wondering if you could put a reminder out today that tomorrow there will be a big march rally for the veterans and their families. It's for United for Vets and protesting the cuts and unfunding of that.
Where is it, Ollie? Where and when is it?
It's in Washington, D.C., and on the Mall. And there also is one scheduled in Appleton tomorrow evening from 6 o'clock to 7:30. There's one scheduled in Appleton. And also celebrates the D-Day invasion.
Yes, yes.
And I commemorates think that.
Thanks so much, Ollie, for that. You can go to unite4veterans.org. That's unite4veterans.org. There's the big rally tomorrow at the National Mall in Washington, D.C. at 2 p.m. You can find out about other gatherings and rallies closer to you by going to Unite for Veterans. Want to make sure I just gave you the right website that I believe is correct. There is also umwa.org. That is UMWA. Oh, excuse me, not the right one. Go back to the first one I gave you. This is what happens when I try to do things live on air that I haven't pre-prepared. We've got a little bit more breaking news on the Trump-Musk front. Gosh, this is so weird. I can't even believe we're talking about this. Reporters at the White House are saying that the emergency meeting in the Oval Office that is occurring is directly related to the Musk fallout. And CNN is now reporting that Elon Musk has salacious pictures of Trump at Epstein Island and plans to post them on Truth Social. Yeah, that would probably get an emergency meeting in the White House going. I mean, how bad? Here's a question for all of us to ponder before the photos drop. How bad do they have to be for Trump supporters to finally step away? How bad does the photo have to be? Is Elon going to trickle them out? I mean, how exactly is this going to work? And I don't know about you, but if the choices are Elon or Musk, I'm going with C, none of the above. I'd prefer not the crazy billionaire. I'd prefer not those people helping to lead our country. In any case, wow, keep your eyeballs on that space and on Elon Musk's Twitter account. Whew. I guess I'll take the fact that Stephen Miller won't be on Fox spewing racist garbage. That's a plus. We'll put that one in the plus column. Thanks for tuning in this afternoon, everybody. Remember, I'll stand up for you. I hope you stand up for me. But it is always better when we stand together for the middle class.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.